Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Living Labyrinths with Athena Dugan. Greetings and welcome, Athena. How are you today?
Greetings. Hi, Hercules. I am well. Thank you.
I am glad to hear that. Happy New Year.
That's right. Happy New Year. Yay.
Yay. And I'm
8 days in.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to your show as always. So if you need me, just holler.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much. Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening, and happy, happy New Year. So tonight we will have guest Rob Meyer-Kuchen. And Rob is a licensed massage and sound therapist that's located in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He owns and operates Seven Notes Natural Health, where he offers massage and sound therapy, Reiki and reflexology, color therapy, and natural health consultations. And it's through his private and small group and large group sessions and classes and events and sound baths that Rob uses his background and training in music, coupled with his expansive anatomical knowledge, to help others hear, see, and feel true wellness. So he's a lifelong musician, and now he's retired from 2 decades of work in churches and schools in Southeast Michigan. His passion is to help others with non-invasive methods supported by remedies and medicines found in nature. He is a certified Veritas Labyrinth Facilitator and a regional rep with the Labyrinth Society. So tonight we're going to talk about Rob's interest in incorporating therapeutic sound into labyrinth walks and other things. So Rob, welcome. Happy New Year.
Well,
I'm glad you could be
Thank
here with
you.
Us tonight.
Thank
yeah.
you. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, wow. It's interesting because we talked many years ago. Obviously, it was about something completely different. But here we are again
mm-hmm.
having a conversation, and this time is talking about your path and where you're going and your interest in the labyrinth. And you have so many diverse talents that are in the healing industry, and it's you're bringing it all together to incorporate it into the labyrinth.
Yeah,
and that's,
it's been a real cool journey.
Oh, excellent. So how long did it take you to come around to this point where you wanted to bring all these modalities to the labyrinth? Or how do you work them? Do you do, like, Reiki around the same time that you would do, like, have your labyrinth experience happening? Or is it, like, something that's, I don't know, how does your Seven Notes Natural Health operation work?
Yeah, so we primarily offer, you know, one-on-one sessions with clients. But as soon as the labyrinth came into my life, I said, this is obviously something that works together with everything that we're doing, from, you know, frequency and sound to intention, mindfulness and meditation. So we try to just sort of meld all those things together. And, you know, you asked about how long did it take me to kind of bring these all together? And I think that the answer to that is really it's still sort of evolving as this all kind of unfolds. I have to be honest, you know, 2 decades ago, I never thought that I would be doing anything but church and school music, and here we are. So it's pretty interesting. The main thing that we incorporate with the labyrinth, however, is our mindfulness and meditation practices with sound and vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, this, when you say you incorporate the sound, what is it? Because I've done labyrinth walks, and I've gone to labyrinth
mm-hmm.
walks where they're just playing a labyrinth music or ambient music. So what is it that you that you bring to your labyrinth experience that makes it therapeutic? What sounds?
Yeah, so our main instrument is singing bowls. That's sort of the main thing that's of my interest. And depending on where the walk is, most of our walks are done through a church that we're associated with, Webster United Church of Christ in Dexter, Michigan, and they're outdoors. But we do have a portable labyrinth that we sometimes will either set up in our own space or take to other spaces. Mm-hmm. And so if we have a space where it's convenient to have, you know, live instruments that we're using during the walk, then we do that. But primarily it's singing bowls, sometimes gongs and other instruments as well, chimes and Shruti box is another one that's really great for meditative practices, because it's providing a sense of an undercurrent of sound without being something that's familiar. So, you know, if you're at a labyrinth walk and someone's playing something that's a tune that you recognize, that may bring in emotions or thoughts or feelings or memories from a whole other experience that may be useful during that walk, but may also serve as a distraction. So what I really like about the instruments that I'm talking about is that they provide more sort of a either an undercurrent or a blanket of tones and tone colors that support holding space, that support setting intention for the experience.
Oh, that's really interesting. So that's what makes it the complete experience. You get to experience everything from tone to color, from and just being there yourself, being a physical presence of that energy.
Absolutely.
Wow. So what type of labyrinth do you work with when you usually do this? Is it a particular style that helps create that experience better, or is it like just, I don't know, how do you come to decide which labyrinth you're going to work with for your therapeutic healing?
Sure. So we prefer to do our events at the labyrinth that I mentioned at the church in Dexter. We prefer it for several reasons, because the time that my labyrinth journey took me into facilitator training was smack in the middle of the pandemic. And so we had a portable labyrinth, but there were barriers there as far as distancing and spacing, and there's still anxiety around being indoors, and, you know, particularly now we're in the midst of cold and flu season, even though here in Michigan, although we're having a pretty mild winter, it's something that we still like to do outdoors. Plus, the labyrinth that is in this particular location is in a space that's phenomenal. It's wooded, it's on the road, but it's far enough away that it feels, you know, private and it feels intimate, but it's close enough to the cities that are local that there's a big enough draw, but it's far enough out where, you know, you may hear some cars going by, but you're probably not getting, you know, highway traffic, that type of thing.
Right.
The congregation's been very mindful about working with their local Boy Scout troop to have a lot of projects done. So there's an outdoor meditation shelter, there's an outdoor chapel, there's raised gardens, there's a big, huge, old, centuries-old red barn right there, the pastor's old parsonage is there, and so there's walking trails, and so it's just really nestled in really beautifully. And when I happened upon this labyrinth for the very first time, I wasn't certain of the style of the labyrinth. And as we started to do a little bit of work on the labyrinth to kind of rehab it and bring it back, I learned that the style of this labyrinth is called a chalice labyrinth that was developed by a gentleman named Bob Peach in Georgia, I believe. It kind of has the typical labyrinth style that we think of, but it also has the switchbacks of the Chart labyrinth, which gives those beautiful sort of hourglass shapes. And at the beginning of the labyrinth, it's a ginormous hourglass shape that kind of looks like a chalice. And
oh, wow.
It's a really beautiful visual, and it's deepened my experience with the labyrinth to go beyond the classical and the Chart style of labyrinth and get to experience this one as well.
Well, now, is that a Unitarian church? Because I was thinking that chalice is very symbolic for like a lot of
mm-hmm.
Unitarian churches. That's
interesting. It is not. It's a United Church of Christ church. It's a UCC
mm-hmm.
church. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, in researching it, a lot of Unitarian churches use this symbol of the chalice with the flame. And so this is kind of, you know, kind of neat that it's sort of an outlier outside of that faith practice's walls. Implanted
mm-hmm.
in this location. This particular project was also an Eagle Scout project, and we've been in contact with the Eagle Scout, and we haven't been able to make a full connection just yet, but if we get in touch with him, I want to ask him why he chose this design, and I'm just very curious
yeah.
about it. So, yeah, it's very cool.
Oh, great. So now are you the keeper of the labyrinth there?
Well, that title bears a lot of responsibility. I'm the one who, for this time, is being entrusted with its care, I would say. The congregation is very, very welcoming, and they're very glad that we're interested, and they're very interested in partnering to do things, and we all benefit from it, which is wonderful.
Oh, that is excellent. So I want to go off the labyrinth for a little bit, and I just want
mm-hmm.
you to tell me a little bit about your passion to help others with non-invasive methods supported by remedies and medicines that are found in nature. So what is that about? Is that part of your natural health consultations, or what is that, and how can Is it something that you bring to the labyrinth, or is it just something completely separate?
So in 2018, I began studying to become a naturopathic doctor. I had a little bit of a break in there with the pandemic and have since re-enrolled in my schooling program. I actually have switched institutions, and now I'm finishing my program through an online university. And my passion for that has really, the interest in that has really always been there. I, in my early adult age, was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease called ulcerative colitis, and I was always very frustrated with modern medicine in so far as the approach of treating and containing symptoms over getting to the root cause of what was going on. And I couldn't imagine, as a 21-year-old who hoped to live to be into his 90s, how I could spend the next 70 years medically maintaining this thing that wasn't necessarily guaranteeing me anything other than a continued lifelong relationship with medications and treatments and surgeries. And so I took that interest into my work. And when I became a massage therapist, it just seemed like a natural progression, that natural health would be something that I would work to share with others. And so it's my goal that by the time I reach age 50, I'll have a thriving practice of natural health clients seeing me as a naturopathic doctor. And absolutely, it all works in to the whole idea of what we're doing with Seven Oaks Natural Health. You know, our mission is to help everyone who comes into our doors to hear, see, and feel true wellness. And certainly, through the experience of walking the labyrinth, we can engage with that as well.
Right. That's beautiful. So, and did the labyrinth sneak into your life, or was it, were you inspired by going to the church and seeing it there? Like, how long was the labyrinth in your life before you actually decide to take it on as bringing it to the people?
Yeah. So I, about 10 years ago, went through a real serious, you know, personal upheaval in my life. My ex and I, who had been together for 7 years in a relationship, decided that it was time to part, and it was a really difficult time for me. And a very close friend of mine, a church musician colleague of mine, said, you need to do two things, Rob. You need to go and get some Reiki, and you need to come to our church and walk the labyrinth. None of that's going to help me. That's all just a hooey. And I said, that's not serious stuff. And that's a common theme in my life, because I felt that same way about sound therapy when I first heard about it. and so so I guess you could say I'm the eternal cynic, right? I need to be proven wrong. And So I went for a Reiki session, and I went to the church and walked the labyrinth, and that was my first introduction to the labyrinth. I walked it several times as I walked through that journey and that transition in my life, and every time it seemed that there was something that I just couldn't quite handle, that I couldn't quite get through, that I couldn't process, wrap my head around, I was just drawn back to the labyrinth. So when my mother passed away in 2018, I was there to the labyrinth. When my dad passed in 2020, I was at the labyrinth. And that was, it was at that point, mid-pandemic, when dad passed, that, you know, we weren't doing things, we weren't gathering, we weren't whatever. So we actually walked a labyrinth into the snow in our front yard. And it was that day that I said to my husband, I think I should do the training to learn how to share this with other people, because there we were in our front yard walking circles around. I'm sure the neighbors were looking out going, what are they doing? You know, is this like, is this like something out of a Christmas movie or something? What's happening? And I'm having an emotional release and writing in my journal while tromping around in the snow. I said, if this is meaningful for this in my life, maybe we should share this with others. And so that's when I signed up for training with Lauren, virtually with Veriditas, and did my training, and it, away we went. And that's just how it went.
Wow. That's beautiful how the labyrinth came into your life out of I guess you might say tragedy, but at the same time it also, you gave new life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, and now you're bringing sound therapy or sound bath. Is there a difference between sound bath and sound therapy? Because with sound bathing, isn't that supposed to be therapeutic as well?
Yeah. So sound therapy is kind of like an overarching term we use. A lot of times in the news you see, sound healing. Those are all sort of words for this category of stuff that we're doing. And you can do one-on-one sessions, and some people call those, vibrational massage, or they call them sound healing sessions or sound therapy sessions, or some other branded specific version with whatever instruments you're using. Sound baths are really just a corporate or a group setting of that sound therapy or sound healing. So rather than one-on-one, a practitioner with a client, maybe on a massage table or a yoga mat, this is a larger group of people. So a sound bath is just as therapeutic as a one-on-one session. We experienced, okay. We just so happened to experience that last night here here at our studio. We had a wonderful sound bath where we combined with another musician who's a harpist, and we combined harp and singing bowls together. And the response that we received was just so phenomenal. It's just such a blessing.
Oh, wow. Now, you work from a studio, right? Mm-hmm. Your labyrinth walks, are they also in your studio? Are they specifically at the church, or does it depend on the event that you're hosting?
It really depends on the event. Sometimes we'll set up our portable labyrinth in our studio. But like mm-hmm. I said, we like to be outdoors in these, mm-hmm. at the labyrinth at this church. You know, and I also travel. I received a really great invitation to do a labyrinth walk for a conference that was happening of church workers this past summer. And I'm hoping to do some work with some churches here in Southeast Michigan where I'll bring my portable labyrinth to them. So it's kind of all over, really.
Oh, nice. Okay. So a lot of your events, like I know I saw you had some workshops or maybe they were introduction workshops on YouTube in which you were doing some sound bath work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was great. I was like, oh, but I'll tell you though, you did inspire me because I do a little sound bathing myself, and I have incorporated a little bit into my handheld walks. Right now I'm just down to my G crystal bowl, you know, but I also have my other singing bowls with me. But yeah, but you've inspired me to incorporate that into my work as well, because it is such a nice balance and it's such a nice intonation, like when you're getting into that headspace and also, you know, leaving that safe space, you know, mm-hmm. it still keeps you grounded. And that's what I love, you know, about the sound bathing or the sound therapy. I like to call it sound bath, but then I laugh at it because I think bird bath every time, and I don't know why.
Right. I always say no shower caps needed.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, wow, that's wonderful. So, do you find yourself as a facilitator, do you find it how does it work for you when you're differentiating between like what you do as a reflexologist do you find yourself like feeling like you want to facilitate something more, like how, I don't know, maybe how Reiki would work with the labyrinth or reflexology could work with the labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think somehow it can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I always say is, you know, you can look at my website or my business card or read my biography and see all the things that I do, you know, and you can give mm-hmm. me a title of, you know, massage therapist or natural health practitioner mm-hmm. or reflexologist or sound therapist. I say if I were to really distill that all down, I would really give mm-hmm. myself the professional title of professional space holder.
Ooh.
And so whether I'm putting my hands on the client in a therapeutic setting with massage or reflexology or Reiki, and there's actual, you know, physical interaction, or it's mm-hmm. more simply holding space by providing what we sometimes refer to as sacred sound in a sound bath, or doing some teaching and educating about what are the role of amino acids in how we're approaching diet and nutrition. It's the same as the 3 or 4 hours of walking the labyrinth. It's all about holding space. And really, I mean, that's the essence of facilitator training, right? How do we create this container? So I don't really approach a labyrinth walk the same way that I approach a one-on-one reflexology session or a sound bath. Mm-hmm. And that is that I am blessed to be trusted by this individual or this group of people to guide them through this time to hold space for the betterment of their being and their experience
yes.
around this earth.
Wow. Yeah, that is true, because they are trusting you and you are holding space and wow, that's intense, because when people walk into a session, it's almost like a given that you're going to hold space for them to
mm-hmm.
release whatever may be happening through those treatments. So that's really important, and that's something that's important with the labyrinth experience too. Not everybody may have a great experience during their
mm-hmm.
walk, but it's something that you can hold space for them to know that it's okay to have that type
mm-hmm.
of experience. And
absolutely.
I think that's always wonderful. So, tell me, what is your ideal, like, or maybe, I don't know if you want to share it or not, but your ideal labyrinth workshop. I mean, do you give like labyrinth retreats, labyrinth workshops? How do you specifically hold that labyrinth as a single entity when you're working?
Yeah. So you're asking what's my ideal labyrinth walk look like?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess I could frame it by saying this. Because our experience at the church that I've been mentioning has been mostly unattached to other events. They've been sort of standalone events. They've been things that have been kind of instigated by myself and, you know, kind of thematically tied to what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting to see us, as we continue to partner with the church and the leadership, to see us begin to meld into the life of the church. And one of the real wonderful blessings that we had this last year in August was to hold a labyrinth-themed service on the Sunday morning. So this particular church's summer practice is to have their first Sunday of the month an outdoor worship service in their outdoor chapel, which is just maybe 15, 20 feet from the labyrinth. So it's very close. And so we had readings from Teresa of Avila, and we had, a Lord's Prayer and a creed that were sort of using this sort of journey language. I gave sort of like a testimonial style sermon. We had a children's sermon where every one of the kids got a paper finger labyrinth to trace it to color or to journal or draw in. And then we ended the service with a labyrinth walk. And what I loved about it was everyone participated. And it wasn't just about a larger number of people being there, although this was our largest labyrinth walk to date on this. In this specific space, but it was about the fact that we all came together, and age, race, sexual identity, marital status, health status, none of that mattered. We were all just walking together. And it was so cool, because there were people walking together with other people who needed assistance. Mm-hmm. There were people who were walking to assist others, not just for physical reasons, but for emotional reasons. And then at the end, we came together and formed a circle around the labyrinth to just hold space to receive the final benediction. And then this church's practice is to sing, like a God be with you till we meet again type song as a closing blessing. And it was just so beautiful. So I guess ideally, I love to see when the labyrinth brings together a group of people that you wouldn't think would join together normally. And then there's this oneness that comes. And that's just sort of the beauty of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds beautiful. It's like you leave room, you leave space for the magic to happen. Yeah. Wow. I think you have to sort of, like with walks, it's nice that there's that room for for spontaneity. You know, there's that nice space that as a facilitator that you hold that space for that magic to happen. And that sounds like beautiful what you're doing. Yeah.
That's our
goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So you're also a regional rep with the Labyrinth Society, and what the regional reps do is they're assigned to their city, and they sort of host labyrinth walks in reference to the Labyrinth Society or alongside with the Labyrinth Society. How does that work for you?
Yeah, so what we try to do is we try to just always make sure that when we're communicating about the labyrinth, that we're also keeping in mind the global labyrinth community. And so we're also sharing about other TLS events that are happening. We're also trying to make, you know, connections and partnerships with other folks who have labyrinths in the area, making sure that the resources of the Worldwide Labyrinth Locator are being used. And so we always, in our follow-up emails after our event, we always try to communicate, you know, this is our next event, but if you want to have the experience, feel free to come out to this space and walk or use the Labyrinth Locator to find, you know, another labyrinth close to you. And then we also make sure that we try to educate folks about what the offerings of TLS are and what the availability of those offerings to folks who maybe aren't quite as committed to the labyrinth as, you know, facilitators or builders or that type of a thing, but just, you know, casual labyrinth users. You know, there's benefits of membership. I think Janice would be happy that we're sort of highlighting that as well, right? we'd get a gold star from Carmel for making sure that we just help to educate folks. Again, it's another way of holding space to say, you know, here we're setting this table. Here's the information.
Yeah.
Please take and use what you can. And the Labyrinth Society is such a tremendous resource to the community.
Yes. Yes, that it is. Well, so do you yourself make labyrinths?
I don't necessarily. we did walk the labyrinth into the snow in our yard, and one of our ongoing dreams and projects is to build a labyrinth here on our property where our home is.
Oh, nice.
And so that is something that we will be making a step into. Part of our vision for the labyrinth here at home is that it is made from found, collected, donated, and recycled materials.
Nice.
We're amassing those things from our travels and from friends and things like that. So.
Nice. Very nice. So going back to the music and the labyrinth walk, because those are two things that's going on. You're listening to the music and you're walking, and they sort of go hand in hand, and they're creating like some type of mood. Now, you're being a musician. Is there a certain, like, even with the sound baths, I heard that there's working with the crystal bowls and stuff, there's a certain amount of megahertz that help induce a certain state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you work off that method, or do you just work what feels right for you when you play your music for your labyrinth walk?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, because we hear a lot about the importance of frequency and specific frequencies in healing modalities and things like that. And, you know, this, even within the sound healing world, there's this great debate between, are your instruments tuned to 432 or are they tuned to 440, which is, you know, I mean, that's a whole, we could talk about that for a whole hour on its own. But the way I like to approach things is I always very deeply consider the mantra of Jonathan Goldman, who is one of sort of the founding fathers of sound healing, at least in the United States as a practice. And his sort of mantra is intention plus frequency equals healing. And so sometimes I may be specifically saying like, oh, we're going to do something that's heart opening. And so we're going to work a lot with the note F, because that's the note for the heart chakra, or 528 hertz is for the heart, that type of a thing. So sometimes we're really thematically tied to things, but a lot of times I more so will go with intention. I will sometimes use muscle response testing to do some muscle testing of what instrument should we use for this. I have a set of chimes. I have a set of the Zafir chimes, or the Nutkoshi chimes. What do we call them? You know, the chimes I'm talking about, the wind chimes. I have a set of those, and I will always test what chime or chimes should we use for this event. And those,
not
those
the Koshi
are
chimes,
Yeah, they're, what do we call them? I forget what we call them. The sort of industry name is Zafir, but they're the ones that, you know, you learn about in the Veritas training. I think they have them in the Veritas store.
Oh, yeah, I forget. Yeah, I know exactly which ones you're talking about, and I've been trying to find those online.
Shanti
chimes. I think, say that again?
We call them Shanti chimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good memory.
I knew I'd get there eventually. it's like tissue versus Kleenex, right? what's the common name versus what's the industry name? But those are beautiful instruments to use in the labyrinth. And the nice thing is, we have a shepherd's hook that we bring out to the labyrinth, and so we'll use the chime to sort of call us to order, and then we just hang the chimes on the hook, and so then it's another layer of sound through the event.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow, that's beautiful. So you have like different methods that you use to call to attention to get the people to gather for your walks.
What
about, have you ever used drumming?
It's not something that I have much background or training in, but it is something that recently I've begun to sort of dabble in. And so as I'm doing some future planning and dreaming, one of my goals is to have a drumming on the labyrinth event. So that's in the works for us.
Oh, well. Yeah, I'll have to try to come out for that one. I used to do some djembe drumming. I used to have a circle in New York, and now I basically just use the shaman drum. But,
yeah,
I love drumming, too. I think you get into that cacophonic energy and the heartbeat. I mean, it totally, you know, takes the mind to a different state. But when you think of drumming, you're connecting with the earth, as the labyrinth is laid upon the earth. So to me, it just sort of makes sense to try to connect those energies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what else can you tell us about your practice? Where, like, has anyone, like, ever booked a session with you and say, well, I would also like to get do a labyrinth walk after my massage. Mm-hmm. Do you ever incorporate it that way?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that goes sort of hand in hand with that concept of sort of throwing out all the professional titles and just going with the idea of professional space holder is that when we structured the business side of things, I used to charge, you know, X number of dollars for a relaxation massage. And then if you wanted like neuromuscular therapy, which is a specialty thing, we'd charge more. But if you wanted to add on reflexology, we'd have another. And if you want to have some essential oils, we'd, you know, and it just felt weird to me as someone who had this philosophical base to be saying to someone, I really feel like we need to incorporate some oils in here, but it's going to be an extra X number of dollars. It just didn't seem right to me. So what we did is we said, we're going to charge by the time. And when you book a session with me, if you want to do some aromatherapy and some guided meditation, then that's what we'll do. If you want to do hands-on work with massage, or if you want to do sound therapy or Reiki or reflexology, you've got me for an hour, for 90 minutes, for however long the session is.
Right.
And one of the beautiful things about that is that we can then integrate and combine. So if you want to do a little bit of Reiki and then some massage and end with sound, we can do that. But the beauty of having a space where we can hold events attached to our professional offices is if someone wants to have an integrative session and incorporate a labyrinth walk, we can just easily pull out our portable labyrinth, set it up, and then incorporate that. So absolutely, that's one of my most favorite sessions to do with a client is to incorporate as many things as they're interested in as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started your business, were your clients, were they familiar with the labyrinth, or did they follow you over to the church for the walks? And how are your clients separate from your labyrinth walkers?
Yeah, there's some crossover there. So, you know, as I said, we sort of kind of got into the labyrinth in the midst of the pandemic, and we were holding, like, our very first World Labyrinth Day, we held a walk that was sort of an extended day-long event, because what we did is we had half-hour blocks where family units could come together. Rather than having, you know, 20 or 30 people converge upon our space, we would have just small groups. And those were sort of COVID precautions. And what we did for that was we decorated the space to kind of make it feel a little more intimate, less of a professional office, kind of less, you know, sort of doctor-patient type of thing and more interpersonal. And as part of that, we bought a scarf or a tapestry that had some labyrinths on it. And offices can be a blessing and a curse, depending on the aesthetic you're going for and the intention of what you're trying to do. And one of the things that really bugs me is fluorescent lights. And so I took one of the scarves and I hung it from the ceiling over the fluorescent lights in my treatment room. And it has labyrinths on it. So every client who comes into my office gets to look at a labyrinth on, or at labyrinths on the ceiling. And it's been a really cool talking point. And we have a beautiful pottery clay finger labyrinth on one of the shelves in the space. And so it's been kind of a nice talking point and a way to educate some of my clients who aren't necessarily already labyrinth folk, but would maybe be interested or maybe interested in incorporating it into their practice. And we try to communicate about all of these things to all of our clients as well. We do have a specific labyrinth mailing list that we keep for folks who, you know, express that interest. And we communicate with them a little more often. But we do, you know, see that education unit or that piece as a big part of our mission as well.
Great. Wow. So do you have any labyrinth books or that you read, or is there anything that keeps you abreast about the labyrinth? What do you do to keep yourself in the know?
So I'm constantly Googling or searching Amazon for books. I said earlier that I'm in a doctoral program for naturopathy, so I do a fair amount of reading for my coursework. But there always seems to be a book or something in my Amazon wish list or in my cart. I wish I had it with me. I just started incorporating, I think it may be one of Katherine Anderson's books, about, it's like a daily labyrinth journal. And there's some labyrinth, there's some labyrinth specific prompts for journaling, in there. And that's been the one that I've been using a lot recently, as particularly through the holidays and as we kind of navigated the end of the year, beginning of the year. And as the weather turned colder and we started focusing more on doing some planning and whatnot. But that's a one that I really love. But always looking for new things. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so do you get to walk the labyrinth as much now that you have like your organization set up? Do you get to engage as much for yourself?
It's interesting because at first it ended up being that I walked less because there was all of the stuff to do, right? And it was work days at the labyrinth rather than just going out to walk it. It was weeding and power washing and hauling gravel and bringing in wood chips and things like that, rather than let's take a drive out to the labyrinth, you know. But one of the things that I've made an intentional part of my preparations is that when we show up before a labyrinth walk, there's not just enough time to set up, but there's enough time to set up, to do my opening ritual, and then for me to have a chance to walk the labyrinth as well as part of my centering, my grounding. So not just centered around those events, but when we go to do work days, I mean, we have multiple finger labyrinths and I'm always tracing something. I find myself while I'm reading for grad school, I find myself tracing the labyrinth as well. And so I try to just keep incorporating it so that the beauty of that personal experience isn't lost in the business or technical side of facilitating.
Right. Oh, that's great. So you keep yourself labyrinth adjusted.
Well,
I call it labyrinth adjusted, you know.
Anytime we travel, I'm always like, oh, is there a labyrinth nearby?
One
of the things that my husband is very passionate about is historical preservation and work and whatnot. And so we travel a lot to churches to share about the work that he does with the historical society that he works for. And he'll say like, oh, I want to go to this area of Ohio. Do you want to come with me? And I'll say, yeah, is there a labyrinth nearby? So we always
try to
incorporate that as part of our travels as well.
Right. Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah. I like to try to do that. Like when I'm traveling, like if there's a labyrinth in this, I want to walk it. Or if I see a flat space, I'm like, I want to put a temporary labyrinth up and walk it.
Sure.
So, yeah. That's wonderful that you get to do that. And you have a partner that supports that as well. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So tell me, how can people take a peek into your Seven Notes Natural Health business? How can they see that operation and maybe make an appointment with you?
Yeah, sure. So the best way to get me is to check out our website, which is just www.sevennotesnaturalhealth.com, or I'm actively active on social media, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and all of my social media handles are the same. It's my name, at Rob Meyer Kukan, with no hyphen, all just one word. And so that's the best way to take a look into what I'm doing. And if people want to reach me, they can email me, contact@sevennotesnaturalhealth.com is my email address, and that's the best way to reach me.
Great. And actually on YouTube, they can actually get to experience some of your sound work.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that,
yes.
Yeah, that's how I mm-hmm. found you. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I found
yeah.
out you were with the Labyrinth Society, and that made it even better. So,
yeah, during the pandemic, we started doing longer virtual versions of sound baths. Now that
mm-hmm.
we're doing more things in person, we don't do the longer sound baths online, but those are archived on our YouTube channel, and you can see them 24/7. But we do a weekly meditative moment. We call it take a break,
mm-hmm.
Which includes some breath work,
mm-hmm.
a video somewhere in nature, and then some type of sound, whether it's singing bowls, gongs, or other instruments. And those come out every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Rob, well, we're cutting down to the wire. We have our 2 minutes left. Yeah, and I want to thank you for sharing your experience, sharing your passion with us, and going forward with the Labyrinth. Is there anything you like to tell our listeners, or do you have like a favorite Labyrinth phrase or something, you know, or anything Labyrinth-based that you want to share with us? Feel free.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Athena, thank you so much for letting me come on the show and for the invitation and the opportunity. It's been a real treat. And I think it was Janice commented on your Facebook post about how much ease you brought to the experience. So she was 100% correct, and I greatly appreciate that. Thank you. It's like sitting down and chatting with a friend, which of course we are, so that's an added thing to it. I think the best thing is to remember that, you know, walking the labyrinth is sort of an experience that happens in the moment, but it doesn't have to be limited to that moment. That fourth R of return doesn't just stop when you walk out of the physical space of the labyrinth, that there's that time of integration, and that there's that time afterwards. And so I always encourage people that to continue the experience of the labyrinth walk is an intentional act that you have to kind of commit to, but through journaling, prayer, or meditation, you can take that experience and extend it into perhaps, you know, the next day or that evening, you know, wrapping up activities as you go on and get ready for bed, that type of a thing. And then if you're a lot like me who keeps copious journals, then it's something that you can come back and revisit again. And so it won't be a time-limited thing, but then it can be a thing that then has that sort of pebble in the water ripple effect. Something I like to share.
Oh, that's great wisdom. Thank you. Thank you. That'll be great. So our listeners, when they go out there and walk a labyrinth, or if you get to go to one of Rob's labyrinth walks, this is great wisdom and knowledge to take with you. So what event do you have coming up?
Yeah, so we were greatly inspired by the public art installation that took placed last year in Madison, Wisconsin, called How Lovely Are Thy Branches. And mm-hmm. being that Michigan has been very blessed to experience more milder winters as of late, we thought, why not have a winter labyrinth walk? So we have asked community members to donate their live Christmas greens, trees, wreaths, and whatnot. And we're going to adorn the labyrinth with the live greens that have been donated. And so we have a winter labyrinth walk at 1 p.m. on January 21st at the Webster United Church of Christ Labyrinth in Dexter, Michigan. And that will be our next event.
Oh, wonderful. Wow. That's going to smell beautiful, too, with all that pine.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, congratulations. That's
Thank
great.
You.
Wow. Now, is that something that this is going to be a one-time event, but you'll have more walks after that?
Yes, we will. We have a series of things planned then for the rest of the year and for the season as it warms up, as we look forward to spring and summer and fall again. So we have a World Labyrinth Day walk on the 6th of May. We have a spring equinox walk in June. We have what has now become our second annual Labyrinth Sunday mm-hmm. service and outdoor service and walk. We'll have an autumn equinox walk that will coincide with this community's really big fall event called their Fall Festival. And then we sort of wrap up the season with a candlelight walk in October. So we have a bunch of things coming up on our menu and program.
Great. And this, they can all go to your website to find out more details.
Absolutely.
Right. Oh, great. Wow. Rob, well, you have a full calendar, and I thank you for taking your time out to talk with us about your whole company, your organization, your labyrinth, and bringing it to the public. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And for my listeners out there, I want to say again, Happy New Year. And I have my monthly online labyrinth walks that I host once a month. And this walk will be on January 20th. It's going to be, Rob, I'm going to do a sound bath. I'm going to do
nice.
A seven chakra sound bath labyrinth
Beautiful.
Walk. Yes. So that's going to be online. And you can go to www.walkersofthelabyrinth.com. You can see more information about it, and you can sign up for the walk there. And you can contact me at athenadugan@yahoo.com or walkersofthelabyrinth@gmail.com for further information. And so with that, I want to thank you again, Rob. And Rob Meyer-Kukin, if you like to get in touch with him, you can go to www.7notesnaturalhealth.com, and you can contact him at
yes.
Facebook at Rob Meyer-Kukin, all one word,
mm-hmm.
and or rob@robmeyerkukin.com. So please definitely check out Rob, and if you can schedule an appointment and if you can experience one of his walks, that would be great. So I want to thank everyone tonight and thank you all for listening in. And for those of you who aren't able to listen in as we speak, within an hour you can review this show and go from there. And thank you, Hercules, and Happy New Year's, everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
You're very welcome, Athena. Thanks, Rob, for a great show. And thanks to our audience. Happy New Year to all. And whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out as Athena recommended on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night.